Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of Masonic Effects, we have an opportunity to put our heads together and reflect and review and contemplate the world around us within the orbit of Freemasonry. One of the most unique, if not the most unique types of organizations with a capacity for endurance and universal thought. It is, I think, in many ways, the first, if not the original opportunity for people, for men, to join together. Not for malevolent purposes, not for aggression in any way, but for the purpose of development, primarily in order to be to achieve the point, the goals, the principles, and live the ethics of Freemasonry and its application. Walk the walk. So, sit back. We have a good program for you today, I think. Oh, we do. I think you're going to like it. Interesting poetry from Charles Jones. Put an error. Scintillating. Let's say that, eh? And the commentary today. We hope to ascend to what? What? It's an opportunity to reflect. I always think that, I tend to think, like a lot of you, that when we're asked questions, it's helpful to have had an opportunity to think through our answers. Often, questions need to be put to us two or three times before we really get to the heart of the subject matter, or to help our own thoughts to gel. Other than that, when we feel compelled or put on the spot, we'll often either say something that is by rote, you know, a cliche, or we'll start to weave together our ideas on the spot. And sometimes they tend to come out, as you will agree, they tend to come out a bit clumsy. They sound clumsy. And what they are, it amount to ideas being developed. Here on Masonic Effects, we hopefully eclipse that phase, so that you are, when asked, in a more reflective frame of mind. So I want you to sit back and enjoy. We're going to touch on notions of mind palaces again. I think that it is understated. It's the subtext of contemporary masonry. I won't use the term of modern. I won't use that term. And I'll tell you why. I'll explain to you why. And I'm going to share a piece of work by Charles-Pierre Baudelaire. But here's a little bit just to introduce the fellow. He was born on the 9th of April, 1821. And he passed away on the 31st of August, 1867. And he produced work as an essayist and art critic. And he was the pioneering translator of Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah. And his most famous work, a work of lyric poetry, was titled Le Fleur de Mal, The Flowers of Evil. Mm-hmm. So this expresses the changing nature of beauty in modern industrializing Paris during the 19th century. He was very original, and his style of prose poetry influenced a whole generation of poets that came after him. And he's credited with coining the term modernity. In that, he meant to designate a very fleeting, ephemeral experience of life in an urban metropolis, and art's responsibility to capture that experience. So that's the man. We'll get started today. A little bit of music and put you in the right frame of mind, I hope, or in the collective frame of mind. This is a piece by Andrea Motis and the Joan Chamorro Quintet with Scott Hamilton. It's the singer here is Spanish. She's very talented. Individual, I'll stop here and let you hear for yourself. The tune will be familiar, but the phrasing and everything else about it, I think it's remarkably unique, just like you. Little baby, don't give up. Groove, I would say. So, jazz in Spain, and an old familiar tune of George and Ira Gershwin. Happened to be part of the craft, but anyway, more of that later. Huh? More of that later. We're part of a process here on Masonic FX that lays claim to an observation. I was, you know how sometimes you pay attention and things just sort of pop out at you. This is came to mind in the last couple of weeks again, is the what if a complication in life and in lodges. And I would think, venture to say that in lodges, Masons are in earnest about passing on what they know to the newcomers, to people that are craving information. I think, to be frank, most of the, and a great deal of the millennials that we're seeing, are giving it a tremendous shot of energy to Masonry, but they come with a different kind of mindset and a very unique a sense of information. You know, when we're offering up our mentoring at the lodge level, we are very clearly competing with the kind of high level performance pieces and educators that are available to people at the touch of a keystroke. And where the information coming to us off the fluid information coming to us from the internet, it has a shortcoming. It's that it lacks that intimate imperative, that connectiveness that happens when you're in the presence of your mentor. The mentor, I'm not talking about somebody that is has the notion that they're a mentor. I'm talking about somebody who is a true mentor. And you know yourself who I'm talking about, and you know the distinction. One is in earnest, but is off-putting and fails to make that connection. And when entered apprentices find a good mentor, they gravitate naturally toward them. It's a natural flow. And this is the point. Chasing and pushing and enforcement never work. Never work. Oh, that was a style of, that was a way of motivation that was part of the early experiments in education in the country I'm in here, failed miserably. It was coupled with a discipline, a punishment. So this was a reward punishment. It was the crudest form of operant conditioning applied to eager, receptive human minds. And it was just a train wreck. We cannot inspire with fear. Fear is what it is, but it's certainly not respect. There's a difference in our mind between respect and fearing somebody. And we know that. Then we may have had the teachers crack our knuckles and make sure that we did the piano lessons, but not care that we hated them. Oftentimes, that push is robbing the student, absolutely robbing the student of that capacity, to that free will to engage and commit to their art or to whatever performance they're trying to achieve. I think it is improper to, and undignified to chase a man. To chase a man who we realized has a wavering commitment for whatever reason. That's his conscience and his obligation in his life. But to superimpose our own goals and objectives, it means that we have to circumvent his natural curiosity and his natural ability to be inspired. And we do that and by pushing somebody. How often have you heard somebody being spoken to about being recruited as a lodge officer very early on? I don't mean the thoughtful discussion about the qualifiers for those roles. I'm talking about those places where there's more of a sense of desperation or indifference to any other way of going about your business. I'm speaking more obviously about the results. What puzzles me is what is required to develop insight onto that process, that maladaptive process. And I think programs like this are one way of doing it. Think about it. I want you to be a concert pianist. You've not even seen a piano before. Your interests are your interests. But I'm determined that it's necessary, because you joined this school of music, it's necessary for me to impose this on you, and my success depends on your compliance. Well, there's no equality in that. That's subservience, or expecting somebody to be obedient. Obedience occurs with free will. Somebody that willingly will follow you into battle is following a leader. Whipping people to battle and murdering them if they don't step ahead is something else. It's failure. Certainly outside of the framework of masonry. So we'll step back into the mindset of masonry. If you're not chasing, you're not pushing, and you're not going to enforce the education of a mason, or his commitment to, or his understanding, how do you do it? No, I don't need to hear your answer. This is in your own mind. You know this. You know these things to be true. There's no pushback. That's within your own state of being. You can put on blinkers and absolutely ignore it. But you're rendering yourself incapable of a talent, of an ability, simply because you're closing your mind. You're closing your mind to yourself. You can't possibly help an entered apprentice to open his mind to learning unless you're capable of doing that for yourself. So here, explore the depths of that notion. How do you open your mind? When do you know that you're becoming closed-minded? You, again, know when you are. And you know what it feels like when there's nobody there that will challenge you or correct you. There's no parent that's going to say, if you walk over there, that's going to be very painful for you or uncomfortable. Because there's nobody there that you trust. You don't trust yourself. And trusting yourself is not simply inserting your opinions as facts or truths in the world. It may well be, but everybody else has a legitimate opinion. So here you are, a student of Pythagoras, who went through the first couple of years of his training with his mouth shut because he didn't have anything to say. We know this from some of the scraps that we have from the Pythagorean College. And we know you didn't do that. Did you learn to listen? Did you learn to master silence? Did you? Again, I'm not the one you have to explain this to. In your own mind, you know the truth of that. Nobody's going to compel you, or this isn't an admission of guilt. No, this is within your own mind. Is this a skill, then, that is something that you need to work on? If you find in your own thoughts that there are deficits, then it simply means that there's something you can apply emphasis to. Good. Insight. Insights like that, huh? This is where we begin to define and embellish the mind palace that Masonry has been talking about for all these many, many years. Masonry is able to address and acknowledge a level of independent thinking beyond the church and state, so that we can reflect and on the balance of events and the balance of the thinking of those estates as an individual. You're not a follower of the king. You grant for yourself whether you support the king or not. Nobody orders you or tells you, and you don't do that under threat. You may not be silly enough to declare your independence and get yourself killed. But we'll get into, we hope to ascend to what? We need to really hear this. Here's a little something. I'll leave you to digest that a little bit. That's why Masonic Effects is in my mind, just a product of observation. You come to it, you tune in because you just decide that there's, and you get something of value, and hopefully it's a bit entertaining. That's just my own ego speaking. But you're here because of your own reasons, and hopefully we fulfill that. Here's a little, an unusual tune, of course. Miles Davis and Charlie Parker. Ah, yeah. A Night in Tunisia. Check this out. Beautiful. Thank you. Drunk. That's all there is to it. It's the only way, so as not to feel the horrible burden of time that breaks your back and bends you to the earth. You have to be continually drunk. But on what? Wine, poetry, or virtue, as you wish, but be drunk. And if sometimes on the steps of a palace or the green grass of a ditch, in the mournful solitude of your own room, you wake again, drunkenness already diminishing or gone. Ask the wind, the wave, the star, the bird, the clock, everything that is flying, everything that is groaning, everything that is rolling, everything that is singing, everything that is speaking. Ask what time it is. And wind and wave and star and bird and clock will answer you. It is time to be drunk. So as not to be the martyred slaves of time, be drunk. Be continually drunk on wine, on poetry, or on virtue as you wish. Whew. Never quite thought of it that way. Here, be drunk for a moment on, and take this in. We hope to ascend to what? It asks the question instead of assuming. We aspire. I know we do because it says so in the Fellowcraft ritual. It says we hope to ascend. Not that the rest makes sense, but if you think about it, really think about it, it does make sense. I wasn't there during the thoughtful development of Masonic ritual. It makes sense no errant clergyman was able to expedite unnoticed our system of ritual as he had with the craft work, technical stuff. Too much scrutiny and accountability, I'm afraid. Every mature, thoughtful person understands potential untapped somewhere in there. In the consciousness of being. If we thought about such things, such questions would fit into our awareness of agency. What is that difference between the untapped you and the competitive achievement? Or are we imprisoned by emotional rectitude, by experience, by birth and rank? Don't think for a moment everyone who aspires to self-improvement will be a high achiever. Some of us are more equal than others. As much as we talk about it, many societies are rooted in misogyny, gender bias, gentrification. In that regard, Freemasonry is an outlier, perhaps the outlier. The subtlety is not lost on us. What if, to achieve understanding, we needed to enter a place in the mind that we don't usually understand or acknowledge? thanks to the minds that formed Freemasonry to meet a need, the same time period that gave imagination a boost in the arts and sciences also gave us fundamental knowledge of the mind. One aspect is cited in the Fellowcraft ritual. We aspire to enter a mind palace. Mnemonics, yeah. How do law clerks and interns learn so much detail? How could a Freemason expand his capacity to learn? Where do we commit work to memory? We know our capacity to learn increases. The more we do, the more we can do. It becomes easier to commit longer passages to memory. And in that moment, we learn that reciting is not understanding. Reciting is a tool, a means to an end. And it's also a key. A key. So you ask yourself, what is it that you hope to ascend? We hope to ascend to that. What is that? Choosing to go through the emotions without understanding the meaning. Recall that this is not something that we can rush through. We need to be able to have discussions and debates, but we also need to be able to stay focused. And where we lose focus is when grown men become either irritable or aggressive. They do those two things when their ideas, when they're losing control, that sense of control of their ideas, or when they have to admit that their ideas, when they admit to themselves what everybody in the room knows, the ideas are simply incomplete. And when a fellow doesn't have practice doing that or hasn't been taught, that it's perfectly reasonable to pick up an idea from somebody else and to reflect on the incompleteness of one's own thoughts. It's perfectly reasonable. It is not an opportunity to mock. That's for outside the doors of the lodge. And even then, we're often taught not to apply what we learn and what we employ inside a lodge, outside the walls of the lodge. The open secret. We apply knowledge, not just because somebody is of the craft, certainly not, but because we become the vehicle for that exchange, that information, that insight. So as Masons, it's not a constant challenge unless you make it a challenge. And then we might want to ask yourself, what in the hell are you doing? Is it a challenge in the way that you're learning how to apply yourself to the sport? That's a skill that you want to achieve, and it's a challenge to learn that skill. And once you do accomplish that skill, it sets you apart from other people. Great, that's a challenge. Or are you feeling that it's something imposed, something external? Somebody's chasing you or pushing you or enforcing this knowledge. Then it becomes an unpleasant experience, and it's going to fade really fast. So are you doing that to yourself? Then I suggest you embrace Freemasonry just a little bit more. You be kind to yourself. You be generous. You be, in the truest sense of the term, charitable toward your own shortcomings. That's how we begin to look at people, not with a withering eye, but as a human being struggling there, but for the grace of God. So any sense of superiority or hubris that may come from a Mason is simply an artifact of an other way of thinking that he hasn't completed. yet. And how we teach then is by example. What is it that when you're around somebody that's inspired, masonry doesn't necessarily play well teaching or with the expectation that a human being is to be gregarious and that every bit of progress that we have is to fit into a workplace model of groupthink. In fact, this progress happens within the shadows of our own mind, the secrets of our heart, not with an audience, not voicing things because those around us are saying the same things. Often you know that that's a bit foolish. Yeah. We'll come back to this. Why then are we able to be drunk on the virtue of masonry? Oh, Baudelaire plays with that whole notion of drunk being, you know, what it is, being something that's a limit or something that it is not. It's like rethinking it. What in the world is he talking about? Anyway, here's something that I hope you may have already been introduced to the Modern Jazz Quartet. This is a little bit of a fusion. It's a play on Bach. Check this out. I'll let you hear the introduction.
How Johann Sebastian Bach would have enjoyed jazz. Certainly jazz has enjoyed Johann Sebastian Bach. Musicians love playing those moving logical lines of his preludes and fugues and contrapuntal works and so on. Bach in his time wrote not just 48 preludes and fugues, but lots of them, probably hundreds. And the Modern Jazz Quartet and Lorinda Almeida are going to play one of them now. It's just called, for our purposes, Fugue in A Minor. And the first statement is by Milt Jackson. Thank you.
recording done 1964 with Lorindo Amida and the Modern Jazz Quartet in the background. What did we just hear? Jazz? Classical music? I don't think that matters much in this regard. We're hearing something unique, something new. The difference is, I think, following the footsteps of masonry and the intent of masonry, to move beyond the temporary nature of modernity, as Baudelaire pointed out, hasty, what is it in the moment? That's modernity for Baudelaire. The fleeting, ephemeral experience of life in an urban metropolis. Lots of things going on. Fleeting. What we're hearing in masonry is that step from something fleeting to something that has meaning. Something with permanence to it. Something defining. Something that has to do with commitments and obligations and oaths and ethics. Who understands? We can open a chapter and read about ethics, but when we begin, it's a little different when we begin to apply it. It's like reading the periodic table and then applying those compounds in the laboratory or in the mind experiments. So we've collectively taken that step toward a more permanent frame of reference, masonry. And then how do we accessorize that, or do we? Do we need to? Well, the music that we have here on Masonic Effects is one way of doing that. It's not necessarily your way or my way. But it's the opening up that notion that there's something redeeming, something worth keeping from the, not a trend. This isn't something that happens when you turn on the radio and it's just there and it's the newest derivative of some well-known algorithms. No, this is something that we turn to of our own free will. Nobody makes you listen to jazz or classical music or attend the remnants of the very first rock concerts. The remnants of that is opera. Nobody, you know, no historian is going to make you tend to those. You turn in those directions by your own hand. By your own study, out of curiosity. What is there about this style of music that is capturing? What is the effect of this style of music? Around here, we listen to Baroque. When I want to be focused, and with practice, it happens very, very quickly. When I want my mind focused and relaxed and receptive, Baroque music, for whatever reason, I don't understand it, but for whatever reason, it just does. It's that key to the mind palace. And the audacious music that was never to be, music produced by people that had been robbed of their dignity by overseers, by slave owners, weren't robbed because there was something that could never be owned and taken from them, that human spirit. This is music that is blindly audacious. And we often hear that if we become good students of this, we find that there's a level of innovation that is quite remarkable once you're in that, you're receptive to it. Other than that, it makes no sense. Oh, either did a baseball game the first time I saw it, either did cricket the first time I saw it, or the 10th time I saw it. either did a great art. I didn't know the difference between good art and art. You develop these tastes. And then, not because it's necessarily defining, but to answer the question, what's the question you put to yourself? What does this form of more permanent, lasting music do to my thinking and to me? Here, part of the answer to that, it comes in the work that we've been doing. Today's piece out of Symbolism in Craft Masonry. This is Colin Dyer's work. I'm just lovely, lovely piece. See how these passages today fit into that, what I'm talking about here. The society, that's would be you and I and us, adopted the Temple of Solomon for its symbol because it was the most stable and most magnificent structure that ever existed. Now, we're looking at this as quite an ethnocentric lens, okay? That's all it is. If you're coming from another part of the world, you will have a parallel to fit that description. What is the most beautiful and stable and magnificent structure? Okay, you have that. This is just one variation on it. The most magnificent structure that ever existed, whether we consider its foundation or superstructure, so that of all the societies men have invented, no one has ever been more firmly united or better planned than the Masons. Its chief aim is to conciliate and tame the passions. Been asked that question, what's the point or the aim? Consider that, to conciliate and tame the passions, to establish among men the spirit of peace and concord, which may render them impenetrable to the feelings of hatred and dissension, whose bitter enemies which poison the best of our days, to inculcate sentiments of honor and probity, which may render men more attentive to their respective duties, to teach a dutiful obedience to the orders of parents and princes, family, intimates, to support toward one another the tender relation of brothers, by which name they address each other, and in a word, to form an admirable sect whose only aim is liberty, love, and equality. If this interpretation should not be to the taste of the candidate, or if he feels any repugnance to adopt it, they will know how to reply in a manner still more artificial. The Temple of Solomon, then, signifies nothing more than a temple sacred to the virtues which are practiced by the society to the greatest perfection, a dungeon destined for the vices where these monsters groan under the most rigorous confinement. The edifices which Freemasons build are nothing more than virtues or vices to be erected or destroyed. And in this case, heaven only occupies their mind, which soar above a corrupted world. The Temple of Solomon denotes reason and intelligence, not an ethnicity, not a religion. It becomes a symbol of reason and intelligence. Now, you knocked on the door of that temple. You stand inside. What are you doing here? And what is it that you want? What is it that you seek? Don't expect that we're going to impose anything on you or chase you. No, that would be undignified. But here, the process helps you to tame, to conciliate your passions and to tame them, to get control of yourself, your emotions, man. Now, let's think for a moment on the significance in masonry of King Solomon's temple. Leaves from Georgia Masonry has the following comments. This is kind of interesting. The Temple of Solomon is a symbol to teach, among other lessons, that no labor or care is too great to fit our hearts and minds as living temples for the dwelling places of the Most High. No labor or care is too great. That we must not profane the Holy of Holies of our own heart by bad thoughts or improper desires, but must keep it pure as He is pure. I'm not good on the maleness of all of this, so just so you know, certainly not. We have, my goodness, yes, have we progressed intellectually over 400 years, 500 years? I would like to think we have. The two pillars at the entrance signify the principles of fixity and motion, attraction and repulsion, which hold the universe together and guide the stars in their courses. Now, the next time you look at mosaic pavement, keep this in mind. Mosaic pavement symbolizes, among other things, the most secret doctrine as to the constitution of matter. It symbolizes, among other things, the most secret doctrine as to the constitution of matter. Think about what it is you're seeing there. And teaches us that life is made up of bright and dark, good and evil, while the blazing star in the center teaches, among other things, that he who fixes his eyes on the heavens and guides his steps by the divine light will be little troubled by what goes on around him upon the earth. What's that saying to you? That a man of character is not going to necessarily rid the world of evil, but he can minimize, he can live a life not troubled by what goes on around him. Now, think about that for your, I would wish that for you. Not to be troubled by the politics and aggressions and the deprivations of the world around us. We're not a utopian society, certainly far from it. We don't hold up to the tests of the utopia. And utopia is that ground for disappointment. We have to give up, in order to achieve utopia, we have to give up free will. It can be achieved, but at such a cost. Such a cost. And it leaves behind such an amazing residue of utter stupidity. So we would wish that you are able to, through your understandings, your applications of your own being, your own ethic, your own faith, a desire to answer questions for yourself, to embrace a way of thinking that allows you to be very accurate in what you see, but not be emotionally drained by it, neither indifferent nor a slave to it. Symbolism. You are part of that symbolism. You are a symbol of something. Next. We'll come back. We need to. Here's a little something that's like just Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock. It's cuts a tune from 1978 called Maiden Voyage. We'll give you a little taste of that. To a close today. I'm going to wrap this up with the hope that we've been entertaining and giving you something useful to consider over the next couple of days until we meet again. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here. I can't say that it's been long enough. It's just like, you know, as soon as we get into our work, it seems like we have to move on. I'll look forward to being with you all again soon. Eh? And in the meantime, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Don't let an opportunity get away from you. Could be the one. Thanks for joining us. A shout out to you folks in the East, from whence all the knowledge emanates, Philippines and China and South Korea and Africa, Uganda and Cameroon. Thank you again. And I like to think that how this all ties together in my mind, from Russia to Brazil to Austria and France, and the elegance of Britain and the striving of my own nation here in Canada, where we're stumbling forward like a toddler, a three-year-old toddler. We're learning, we're making mistakes, but come on now, we're only, what, less than 200 years old. Masonry is so young. when we have reached the first millennial, when we are 1,000 years old, masonry will be similar but different. And so will you and I. I look forward to seeing you all soon.
Hey, diddle, diddle, and a cat, and a fiddle, and a cat jumped over the moon. The world is right, my heart is light, I'm like a baby. There is no maybe, I know my fate. I never knew what love could do, my heart is reeling. The way I'm feeling, it's simply great. Fit as fiddle and ready for love, I can jump over the moon of above. Fit as a fiddle and ready for love. Can't run away without having a care, I feel like a feather that's floating in there. Fit as a fiddle and ready for love. For the church bells will be ringing as I march with my empire. All the church bells will be ringing with a hey, nanny, nanny, and a ha-cha-cha. Hey, my baby's okay. Ask me a riddle and what did he say? Good as a fiddle and ready for love.
Thank you.